Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's about 6 seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We're about to start Juneau Afternoon, so stay tuned because I've got a great bunch of guests coming up to introduce you to. Vaughn Sherman is in town. He's the author of a new book called Sea Travels. He'll be talking about it at the Douglas Public Library coming this weekend. I guess coming today. Coming this evening. And Tristan Knutson-Lombardo and Lindsay Halvick will come in, and they'll talk about the Orca Summer Program's kayaking coming up, but you got to take a safety class by the 27th of April. Kristen Mabry is opening up a new business, Mountainside Wellness, and she's going to be doing a WEAR fundraiser. So we'll hear about that from her. And the principal of, Harborview School, Dave Stoltenberg is going to be coming in to tell us about the open house for kindergarten. So we'll have all of those things on Juneau Afternoon following National Native News. Stay tuned with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Navajo man says he's safe after running the Boston Marathon. He crossed the finish line about 24 minutes before the explosions, which killed and injured people Monday. Thomas Hatofili says he was entering the subway when he heard the blast. At first, he thought it was a train crash until later when he saw news about the bombs on television.
The scene and just watching it, you know, because they put everything more in detail here in Boston. And just to see, you know, just the scene, it's really awful.
Hatofili says it was overwhelming not being able to get in immediate contact with family and friends. He was out of touch with them for about 3 to 4 hours. After he talked to loved ones, word of his safety spread quickly through text messages, email, and Facebook. Hatofili is from Tuba City, Arizona. This was his 12th time running the Boston Marathon, and he plans to run it again next year. Officials in Massachusetts continue to investigate the bombings. So far, 3 people have been reported dead and more than 170 injured. Oral arguments began today in the U.S. Supreme Court in the case Adoptive Couple versus Baby Girl. The court will examine if the child with a Cherokee father or the couple the girl's mother chose for adoption will be her permanent home. The girl's biological father is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. There are several issues tribes and Native organizations are watching in this case, including how it may impact future adoptions of Native children. The Oregon Senate has passed a bill that would loosen a new state policy that requires schools to erase Native American logos from uniforms, sports fields, trophy cases, and other items. KWSO's William Robbins has more.
Less than a year ago, the Oregon State School Board of Education imposed a statewide ban on Native American mascots in schools. The Education Board gave schools with Native American mascots until July 2017 to change them or risk losing state funding. Under a bill passed last week by the Oregon Senate, schools would be able to keep their Native American mascots as long as local tribes agree. A committee in Salem recently heard testimony on the bill to overturn the ban on names like Brazier Chiefs. Brenda Frank is a member of Oregon's Klamath tribe and spoke out against the use of Native names or imagery.
The best research that made this decision tells you, that race-based mascots are wrong. They're just outright wrong.
Not everyone is in favor of the ban. Supporters of the mascots, including some tribal members, say they're a source of pride. The bill will now go to the Oregon House. For National Native News, I'm Will Robbins.
Some tribal communities nationwide need additional sanitation infrastructure and projects ranging from water main replacement to water tank maintenance. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov has details.
There are about $2.9 billion worth of sanitation development projects in tribal communities across the U.S. And Wyoming has 33 projects that add up to just under $16.5 million, according to the U.S. Indian Health Service. Ronald Ferguson directs the IHS Division of Sanitation Facilities. He says Wyoming is in a better position than some other areas.
A lot of our larger needs are on the Navajo Reservation in Arizona, and because it's a very large land area with lots of people, and then in Alaska. But we also see a lot of need in Oklahoma. A lot of the infrastructure has been put in Wyoming and in Montana through the years. There's still needs, but I think we've addressed that with time.
IHS recently signed a memorandum of understanding with the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of the Interior, and the Department of Agriculture. The pact should help the agencies better share resources to get the projects done more efficiently. IHS is still unsure about which projects will be funded in 2013. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhurov.
On this day in 1976, the United National Indian Tribal Youth Organization, or UNITY, was incorporated as a nonprofit organization in Oklahoma. It supports leadership development among Native American youth. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. It's 6 minutes after 3 o'clock, and we're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. My first guest is here in town to tell us about an incredible book, which Vaughn Sherman wrote about his uncle, who was a master mariner. And we've been, if you've been listening to the station this week, you've heard lots of public service announcements talking about the fact that he's going to do a talk tonight at the Juneau, at the Douglas Public Library. Welcome to the show, Vaughn.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate it.
So this book started in a kind of an interesting way. You were sort of trapped in a car with your uncle in Denmark, right?
My wife and I had spent about 10 years in Scandinavia and about half and half between Stockholm and Denmark. And my uncle was a second-generation Dane. Never been back to Denmark.
Uh-huh.
And we were going back, having dinner with him, and he looked very wistful. And so I looked at my wife, and she looked at me, and we nodded and said, "Uncle Holger, would you like to go with us?" And he stopped it.
So now his name was Holger?
He was J. Holger Christensen.
Okay.
Nobody ever knew what the J stood for.
Yeah, well, probably a well-kept secret. Anyway, but the book is, he actually received his Master Mariner's license, I think, in 1947?
No, it was earlier than that. It was during the war.
Yeah,
I think 43, something like that.
But even though the book is entitled Master Mariner, he served in lots of other capacities from the time he was like 15 years old or younger.
Absolutely. Yeah. Starting out as an ordinary seaman, able-bodied seaman, a bosun, station master, all those positions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but before that, he was working for his dad as well.
He continued working for his dad for many years.
Yeah.
He'd be on the high seas for late fall to spring, then come home and help his dad.
And he actually settled in Bainbridge Island, Washington, right?
His dad did. Holger was born in Nome.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, because they were up there with the gold rush.
1906.
Yeah.
And his dad made enough money out of the gold that he went down to what he had decided was his home, and build a house and build a boat, a work boat.
I don't want to give away any of the wonderful passages in this book because it's a great read, but I have to say that the tone in the book is remarkably matter-of-fact for someone who underwent the kinds of adventures that your uncle did.
Yeah.
Now, there's a point in there where he's kind of casually mentions, well, it's a little less than casual, but he's talking about 55-foot seas up north of Attu Island in the middle of a storm that basically was so bad that the winds knocked the building that held the wind gauge down so that it fell off the mountain it was mounted on.
Absolutely, and then the steering gear went out, too.
Yeah, and his engineer had no idea how to do this thing with the winches and the cargo winches to take the strain off of the rivets that had popped out, which were 2 inches in diameter,
right,
we might mention.
Right, he was really unhappy with that guy.
But he tosses that off. I mean, but I can imagine what went on in the hold of that ship, and it was probably not as kind and quiet as he makes it sound.
I worked a lot on boats myself and have had a life full of excitement and fear, if you will say. That, and I think that if you live enough fear, that you get kind of used to it.
Yeah. Somebody once described seagoing, I think, as hours and hours of boredom followed by moments of sheer panic.
Exactly.
Yeah. As the story unfolded, when you came back from the trip to Denmark, then you and your uncle spent a year that you described as really one of the best years of your life.
It really was.
Tell us about how that came about.
He was retired. He lived on Bainbridge Island, which is a ferry ride away from where we lived in Edmonds, Washington. And every Wednesday, we arranged this after our trip to Denmark. Every Wednesday, he would come over on the ferry. And he would come up to my house, and we would go over a tape that he had taped in during the previous week, answering questions that I'd given him. He would then read what I had written, and then we would make up new questions and go out to a great lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that for a year. And both of us just we liked each other, and both of us enjoyed the heck out of that. Yeah.
You chose to write the book entirely in the first person.
It was his book.
At times, you insert things that are from your seagoing career just as a kind of a reflection on something that he said. It's fairly rare, but it's there.
Right.
Now, and there were times when I became a little confused over who the I was. I kept having to kind of brace myself and go back a couple of paragraphs and say, wait a minute, the I just changed back
then. Shame on me. Because I should have kept it
italics would have been, yeah. Would have been my choice, something
right.
That let me know that it was your voice coming
right,
through all of a sudden.
Right.
But despite the fact that you were telling his story, your voice comes through, and now that I have a chance to talk with you here, mm-hmm. Your voice comes through the book very nicely. You obviously had a great deal of respect for this man, mm-hmm. And now that I know what you sound like, I can hear passages of the book from you. I sense your presence.
Yeah, I think when somebody does that, when ghostwriting, if you want to call it ghostwriting, that you have to be as one to really be effective. And we knew each other very well, of course, and respected each other.
I'd also suggest that whoever did this piece of authorship had to know the sea very well, because the places in there where you were able to very quickly make it clear to me as I was reading what you were talking about on the boat without having to stumble around through a whole bunch of research or anything like that. And I think probably those just came real naturally.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, Pat, but I worked on Fish and Wildlife Service boats here in southeast Alaska for four seasons. One season was half a year. And so I had my own adventures that way.
So is that the next book?
No, the next book is actually going to be a follow-up to a book I also have out, and that's a spy book, if you will.
Oh.
I had a career in the CIA.
Oh, okay.
That was my main
career. I think I read that on the back jacket.
And I'm already writing a follow-up to that.
Okay, well, let's make sure that everybody knows that tonight at 6:30 at the Douglas Library, you're going to make a presentation about this. And you just came down from Anchorage, having done the presentation up there.
And Fairbanks and Seward.
And in Anchorage, your son? Or
my son.
Your
there.
Son was there.
Yeah,
and
right.
And what was that interesting comment you said that he told you after your presentation?
His comment was that he had heard me as he grew up. He had heard all these stories. But it was the first time he heard them all sequentially as a life story.
Son of a gun.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, terrific. So 6:30 tonight over at the Douglas Library, Vaughn Sherman is going to present a kind of a read-through, a little bit of information about Memoirs of a 20th Century Master Mariner, his latest book, and he will also be there to sign copies of the book, so if you have one, bring it. If you don't, I'm assuming they'll be on sale over there at the library. Good,
yeah.
Good enough. Well, welcome to Juneau. Welcome back to Juneau, I guess. You've probably been here a few times if you were sailing.
And thank you very much for having me.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed being the one who got to talk to you today.
Thank you.
You bet.
This is Bird Note. Chicago Bird Collision Monitors.
That's Annette Prince, director of Chicago Bird Collision Monitors. Since dawn, she and others, all volunteers, have been downtown rescuing birds that have collided with skyscrapers. In many urban areas, collisions are the fate of hundreds of thousands of birds. Her team's out in Chicago every morning during spring and fall migration. Now they're bringing in birds in brown paper bags to Annette. She'll transport the survivors to Willowbrook Rehabilitation Center.
Looks like I got a hermit thrush, a dark-eyed junco, plus a Nashville warbler and another hermit thrush.
What is that?
Towhee.
A towhee?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a towhee.
Wow.
You got yourself a towhee. I've never
like
gotten one. He's going to make it. He's super jumpy. Awesome, Rich. Good job.
And I was over here getting the sparrow. Then I heard the clunk on the glass, and I think it was the hawk. He might have been chasing his thrush. So I got five live.
Oh, look at you. That's a good day.
And three dead. I got two thrushes, a sparrow. I'm not sure. It's probably immature white-throated or something. A kinglet and brown creeper.
Here's Annette again.
It's heartbreaking to see them hurt or killed. I think the work we do is trying to raise awareness, try to save the individual birds that we find, but certainly look at the larger picture of finding a way to make these birds' journeys safer and give these birds a better fate.
You can follow Annette to the rehab center and learn more about Chicago Bird Collision Monitors when you come to our website, birdnote.org.
The music and magic return when IBEW Local 1547 presents Arlo Guthrie, Friday, May 3rd at Centennial Hall. Eldest son of legendary Woody Guthrie, Arlo is now on tour, paying tribute to his dad's 100th birthday and playing the music that's endeared them to us. Tickets and more information at jazzandclassics.org or call 463-3378 for Arlo Guthrie, Friday, May 3rd. Jazz and Classics, music, magic, don't miss it.
Hey, it's about 16 and a half minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Taking a look at the weather here, it looks like rain. We never have that around Juneau, do we? And it looks like rain all the way through the week. The farthest it goes down on that thing is to one Thursday night, cloudy with lows around 32. Lows will be near freezing, highs, nice highs. We're talking 47, 48 degrees. If the wind dies down, that would be sunning weather if we had sun. Well, we certainly are going to have adventures, and some of them are coming up as a part of Orca's presence in Juneau. Lindsay Halvick is here, and she's going to tell us about the summer trips, classes, and outings that are planned for Orca. Before you do, in case there's one person out there that doesn't know, what's Orca stand for?
So ORCA stands for Outdoor Recreation and Community Access, and it's a program of Southeast Alaska Independent Living, also known as SAIL. And ORCA provides, you know, outings, recreation in the community for people with disabilities, either physical or cognitive.
Okay. And you're just coming up on, you know, in the winter you got people up on the Eagle Crest and you're skiing with those pieces of equipment that allow someone with practically nothing, no legs, no arms, to be able to enjoy the winter slopes.
That's right. So we have a pretty big adaptive ski program, and that's probably one of our most visible programs in the community up at Eagle Crest. But we also have a lot of summer programming that people don't know about.
Well, now that Eagle Crest is shut down for the season, let's talk about what a person can get into with ORCA in the summertime.
Yeah, so we have a lot of programs starting up here actually in May. We have many courses that we're going to be offering both for people with physical or cognitive disabilities of all ages and abilities. We're going to be offering a kayak course in May, and then in June we're going to be doing a hiking and camping course, and moving into July we'll have a biking course.
Okay, so the first one of these that somebody has to do something about is, in order to be in the kayaking course, you have to finish a safety class, and that course is on April 27th, right?
That's right. So the course will begin on April 27th, and we'll have a safety class to kick it off, and then the course is actually going to end in a kayak trip in the Beardsley Islands at the end of May.
Wow.
Which is exciting.
Yeah, this is exciting, all right. And so on April 27th, you have the safety course. And then are there The actual trip is May 23rd to the 28th. So between April 27th and May 23rd, are there other things that the kayaking process will be doing?
Yeah, so we'll have about five or six different outings, some on the lakes around town, and then also we'll have an outing out to Benjamin Island, an overnight trip out there, and just some other all-day kayaking experiences so people can get the skills and comfort that they need so we can finally get out there and also go on this trip, which is a pretty exciting trip for people to be able to access.
Incredible trip. Can you talk a little bit about the adaptation for kayaking?
Yeah, so I guess it just depends on, you know, what disabilities people come with, but we do have some adaptive pieces, you know, to help people with the paddling, and then we also just have a lot of different techniques about how to get people in and out of the kayak safely, as well as techniques to help them just learn what it is to safely maneuver a kayak and have fun out there on the water.
Do you teach the Eskimo roll?
We do do some in the pool, but it's mostly just safely exiting the kayak, less than the Eskimo roll.
It's tough. I learned how to do it years and years ago, but it I don't know if I could do it now. I'm not sure my back has that kind of flexibility anymore.
It's much harder on open water than it is in the pool.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Anyway, so the kayaking course is but one of these possibilities. The other thing that people need to take action on right away is you have a whale watch cruise coming up.
We do, yeah. We're having our annual Orca Whale Watch cruise donated by Allen Marine on May 19th. And tickets for that will go on sale on May 1st. You need to contact SAIL to get reservations and tickets for that. And the tickets will be $45. And all the proceeds will go to the Orca program at SAIL.
Okay. And so Allen Marine Tours said, hey, take one of our boats and take everybody out and go whale watching. What a wonderful what a wonderful donation for them to do. So this is May 19th, but that's not the date that's really important, although you do want to show up. But the really important date is that tickets go on sale on May 1st, and they sell out on May 1st sometime late in the afternoon, right?
That's right. It's a very popular event we have each year, and they sell out right away. So if you're interested in coming on that and supporting our program, I would definitely recommend that you call right away on May 1st.
This is the one where you want to get your tent out and sit in the line and wait.
That's right. That's right.
And then you have those two activities. So May 19th, you've got the whale watching cruise.
And that's open to the public also.
Oh,
it's not just you know, our consumers, participants, and their families, but it's definitely open to the community.
Okay. And then May 23rd to the 28th, you're taking everybody out to Beardsley Islands in Glacier Bay on the kayak trip if they have gone through three of the six kayak courses between the 27th of April and the first day of the cruise,
that's
right?
That's right.
Okay. So very important to get started with that program. And there's a cost associated with all of those things. You can find all the details out of that by contacting Orca or by going to their website. And then you have a set of youth summer camps, and we were going to try to get the dates off of your website, and I can't find them out there. But anyway.
Yeah, so we're just releasing the dates for those this week, but we've coordinated with some different organizations in town to offer three youth summer camps this year for any kids and youth with disabilities. So the first one will be an art and recreation camp. We've collaborated with the Canvas to do that. And so basically we're going outdoors, either making art outdoors or collecting materials from the outdoors to make art. And so that's been a pretty popular camp in the past. It's really fun and fun to work with the Canvas and have an inclusive camp experience. And then we'll also have one with the Zach Gordon Youth Center a few weeks later. And that one we're calling it H2 Awesome. So basically, we're just having a week of fun, either in the water, around the water, or just doing different activities related to, you know, what we know here in Southeast is a very wet place. And then the last one is we're collaborating with Discovery Southeast and doing a camp just before the 4th of July with them.
And then come August, you've got a bike trip.
That's right. So, you know, we have a kayak trip in May, and then we're going to do another big trip at the beginning of August up to the Yukon, starting in Haines, going up, doing a lot of biking in Whitehorse and Carcross, and then coming back down through Skagway. And so that'll be a supported bike trip. Again, people of all abilities are welcome. And for the ages, usually for our bigger trips, we kind of recommend 17 and up, you know, just to participate in that length of trip. Usually it works out pretty well. But, yeah, so it's a fun trip, and we're also going to have a biking course leading up to that so people can build the skills and endurance and knowledge to come along.
But Lindsay, one more time, the money that is, you know, part, at least some of the money that's used to underwrite the costs of these things is raised by people going on the Whale Watch cruise. And so the tickets go on sale on the 1st. The Whale Watch cruise is the 19th from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. Tickets are $45. Where do you get them?
So you can get tickets by calling SAIL at 586-4920. You can also get any information off of our website also at sailinc.org.
Okay, and the money goes to a great process that helps people with all kinds of disabilities and needs to get out into the world and do wonderful things like take a kayaking trip to the Beardsley Islands or bike to Whitehorse and beyond. So what a wonderful program ORCA is for Juneau, and what a wonderful person you are for putting so much time and effort and work.
Oh, it's fun work, and it's really exciting to get people out there and get outdoors and have a fun summer.
Lindsay, thanks so much for telling us about this and for being there.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 16th of April, 2013. It's the birthday of Gertrude Chandler Warner, born in Putnam, Connecticut, 1890, the creator of the Boxcar Children series of books for children. She taught first grade for over 30 years, and one day, when she stayed homesick, she thought up the story of the Boxcar Children. Her family, when she was a child, lived near the railroad tracks, and she'd often go out and watch the trains go by, sometimes get a glimpse into the window of the caboose, and sometimes see a little stove and table and a coffee pot on the stove, which fascinated her, the idea that someone was living in the caboose. And she invented the story about four orphaned children, Henry, Jesse, Violet, and Benny, ranging in age from 6 to 14, who, after their parents die, go to live with their grandfather, who the children feel is a cruel man, and so they run away and they set up housekeeping in an abandoned boxcar, supporting themselves and living a life of great independence. Gertrude Chandler Warner said that the story at first raised a storm of protest from librarians who thought the children were having much too good a time without any parental control, and Warner said that is exactly why children liked the story. She wrote the original 19 Boxcar Children stories. In the years since, more than 100 titles have been added, written by others. It's the birthday of Kingsley Amis, born in London, 1922, went to Oxford, where he met Philip Larkin, who became his best friend, and who encouraged Amis to become a novelist. He at first wanted to be a poet, but Larkin helped him turn his sketches about campus life into his first novel, Lucky Jim. It's the birthday of Charlie Chaplin, born in London, 1889, who started out as a vaudeville actor in a comedy troupe, went to Hollywood, was shocked at how crude the movies were, started directing himself, and in the year 1914, he directed, wrote, and starred in 16 films in 6 months, in which he invented his most famous character, the Little Tramp, and he became a star recognized around the world. 1787, the first American play opened at the John Street Theater in New York City, written by Royal Tyler. He was 29, graduate of Harvard, veteran of the Continental Army. The play was entitled The Contrast, first play by an American writer to be professionally produced. And it was a success. It played 4 times that month in New York, and then in Baltimore and Philadelphia. George Washington went to see it. Here's a poem for today by Lewis Simpson, entitled Frogs. The storm broke, and it rained, and water rose in the pool, and frogs hopped into the gutter with their skins of yellow and green, and just their eyes shining above the surface of the warm solution of slime. At night, when fireflies trace light lines between the trees and flowers, exhaling perfume, the frogs speak to each other in rhythm. The sound is monstrous, but their voices are filled with satisfaction. In the city, I pine for the country. In the country, I long for conversation, our happy croaking. Frogs, a poem by Lewis Simpson from The Owner of the House, published by Boa Editions Limited, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping individuals and businesses make their best impression where people learn about them first, on the Internet. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. Produced by Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
It's just past 3:30, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next two guests, delightful to have an old friend on radio here. Lauren Losky is here with Aware, and with her is Kristen Mabry, who probably now that I've said her name, you say, oh, I know her. Kristen has taught in many, many places around town. She's a fitness instructor, including up at the university where I took a couple of three yoga classes from her years ago when I was still at the university. Welcome, Kristen. Welcome, Lauren.
Thanks, Kat.
So you have an event coming up that is at your new place.
I do.
Yeah. So first, let's start about the new place. What's Kristen Mabry up to here?
Thanks. So I've finally come into my own space with Mountainside Wellness. So I'm able to offer my fitness classes and training in a space where I can provide the environment that I've always wanted to, and that is welcoming to people who are newer to exercise and people who are just excited to come and try things out.
So where is the new space?
The new space is in the Articore building downtown. That's above the charter school. It's between 4th and 5th and Gold and Harris up on the fourth floor. 1,000 square feet of beautiful space with a wall of windows, and I just feel really blessed to be a part of that community in the Articore building.
Wow. So did it take a lot of rebuilding or refurbishing?
They have been wonderful to work with me to customize the space, yes. So I'm very excited, and we were painting last night till midnight, so it's really coming along, and it's going to be quite a beautiful space.
Did you have to do anything to the floor? I mean, like
they carpet? Are putting a new flooring for me.
Well, they are.
Yeah, hardwood okay. flooring. It's it was an old insurance company office, so I had a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's you're open for business, right?
I am open. I've been having classes for the past 2 weeks with lots of success.
Wow, okay. So you're doing a special kind of grand opening deal, open house on the 20th and 21st, and that's what ties into the Aware operation.
That's correct.
So let me turn briefly to Lauren. Mm-hmm. How did you connect up with Kristen?
Well, Kristen has graciously agreed to hold a class on Sunday, a Zumba fundraiser in honor of Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and all of the proceeds are going to go to Aware, which we are just so grateful for. And what we know about sexual assault is that getting back in your body can be a really powerful form of healing. So we're just really grateful that Kristen has kind of teamed up with us in this effort.
Sexual Assault Awareness Month, this is a national event, right?
Correct.
Are we doing any other activities besides Kristen's fabulous open house Zumba awareness thing in honor of this month? It's April, right? All of April?
Yes, okay. All of April. And Aware is actually hosting an event the night before, Saturday night at the Rockwell. It starts at 5:30, and we're going to be having kind of an art exhibit in honor of the theme of Reclaim, Renew, and Rejoice, kind of honoring everything that people have experienced, everything, all the suffering, and then moving forward and celebrating the beautiful connections that we can all make.
We've had folks on many times on this program from Aware, and it's a wonderful resource here in Juneau. Could you talk briefly about what Aware provides?
Yeah, gosh, we provide so many things. I'm impressed every day. We have a 48-bed emergency shelter for people escaping domestic violence and sexual assault. We also provide a lot of non-residential services, legal advocacy, education groups, children's groups, counseling for children. And then we have a whole prevention team that's working to effect the changes necessary to end violence against women and children.
How does someone come in contact with Aware if they feel they need their services?
Yeah, that's a great question. We are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Aware's number is 586-6623. And if anyone listening ever has any questions about domestic violence or sexual assault, we're definitely the people to call.
Okay. And Kristen, she gave her side of the story. Have you been involved with Aware before this event?
I really haven't, other than just supporting their functions around town. But I figured with my own space, now I could start getting more involved in the community and supporting our local organizations and charities more. And so I'm very excited to be able to do that.
Now, you're actually, this is the Zumba fundraiser is a component of a two-day open house at your new Mountainside Wellness.
That's correct, Pat.
Can you describe some of the things that you're going to be offering? And everything's free.
So a little sampler of all the wonderful things that I'm doing in my space. So some of the boot camp classes, core training, Pilates Fit, Yoga Fit classes, those are all free. Come in, drop in, try it out. Give it a chance, see what you think. And then I'm also having a spring clean your closet sale. So folks are bringing in lightly used clothing to trade, sell, barter, whatever they want to do, just to get things out of the closet, clean it up a little bit, and whatever's left we'll donate to local charities as well.
Are you looking for people to donate stuff for the sale?
Sure, yeah. So okay. We still have a few open tables. So if folks are interested in coming and bringing some stuff, contact me. There's information on my website.
Okay, but you're mostly clothing, right?
Clothing, accessories. It's not a garage sale,
okay, so
step up from that.
No
yeah.
old TVs.
No, thank you.
No used cars, no boats.
<thank you.
laughs> Okay, good. So you said boot camp.
Yeah.
So is this exercise with army boots, or what are we talking about here?
So my Tabata boot camps are based on research done by Amitri Tabata, a Japanese researcher, back in 1996, and he found the optimal timing interval for resistance training and cardiovascular training. And so we've got that formula for success. So if you're looking for results in your performance in any sport or just being able to hike up the mountains this summer, this boot camp will get you in shape for that. I guarantee it.
How long – this is a free boot camp. Taste, but the program's got to last longer than 2 days.
The program is an intense, dedicated 8 weeks.
Okay.
So you're living and breathing the nutrition aspect component, the behavioral science aspect component, and the workouts for 8 weeks.
Who's Tadaka? Was that the name?
Tabata. Amitri Tabata.
Okay. And who's that?
He was a researcher in Japan, still is, but in 1996 is when he did his definitive work on the subject.
How did you come across him?
Oh, he's famous in the fitness industry. Everybody is grabbing on to that concept and doing high-intensity interval training, but the Tabata interval is still the definitive interval.
Well, my question was actually addressed at something that I know about you, and that is that you are constantly, ever since I've known you, you're constantly seeking to find out more about this. It's like, you're like a woman on a mission. And if there's a conference someplace or an opportunity, I can remember when you traveled to India and spent the night in a cave that was inhabited by a yogi who lived to be past 100 and like that. I'm not sure what I want to ask. What drives that? Is it the fact that you're dissatisfied with the things that you already know, or what?
Not at all. I think, life is about learning and growing. And then when you teach, it's about sharing that knowledge. And so, my cup is never full. I'm always looking for new information to share and to just enjoy the change that I see making in the lives of my clients and students. There's no greater joy than that.
And certainly, I have to say, you were the first person that I knew that had ever thought about the idea of combining a Pilates workout with yoga. And it's such a natural fit. The two of them go together. It's painful.
But, in a good way.
Yeah, well, it's all good pain, right? So could you explain a little bit about that addition of fit to the tail end of those words? You have Pilates fit and yoga fit.
Yeah, so, both Pilates and yoga are disciplines that have been around a long time, particularly yoga, for thousands of years. And there are aspects of both of those disciplines that are just really amazing and wonderful. In a fitness studio, we're able to combine some of those ancient and not so ancient principles with modern fitness principles to make it more accessible to everybody, and that you don't have to be able to throw your leg behind your head to practice yoga, and you don't have to have a whole lot of equipment to be able to do a mat Pilates class. So we're just trying to make it accessible to everybody and sort of demystify these traditions and make it into a workout that you can do on your lunch hour.
The other two kind of intriguing things that were on your list of things that are going on were an essential oils workshop or something like that, and some nutrition information.
Yeah, so we're doing a green cleaning class this weekend. I'm all about using less chemicals and more natural products whenever possible. So we're going to make our own cleaners, a couple of different kinds, some laundry detergent and some surface cleaner, using products you already have at home and some essential oils to give it a little boost, and so that you aren't afraid to be trapped in your bathroom with your cleaner. No excuses. It's spring cleaning time.
Okay. So the whole then list of possible things that someone could take advantage of this weekend for the free open house on the 20th and 21st include a boot camp session. Now, we know what that's about. Pilates fit, yoga fit, essential oils, nutrition, and at the same time, scattered around the outsides of the thing will be tables that people will be selling slightly used clothing and so forth.
Yeah, so each thing has its own dedicated time. So the sale will be on Saturday afternoon, apart from the trainings.
What time is the Zumba fundraiser?
5 o'clock on Sunday. Come and bring your friend, your mama, your mailman, your senator. The more the merrier.
If we've never done these activities, how should we come dressed?
Comfortably with some kind of tennis shoes. You need some supportive shoes. If you don't have supportive shoes, you can do it barefoot too. That's okay. The most important thing you need to bring with you is the capability to smile and laugh. That's the most important requirement.
I got to ask you, I've never done Zumba, so can you describe it? Is there any way to describe?
Sure. It's a mix of different Latin rhythms. It's all about the music, and so it's not traditional Latin dancing, and that is it is a fitness class, but we keep the moves very simple. You do maybe 3 or 4 different moves to a song. It's very easy to follow, and my very, very good friends, Allison Cooney and Joy Will, will be there with me, and it's just going to be a whole lot of fun. So if you can count to 4, if you can move to the side and forward and back, you can do Zumba.
Wonderful. And Lauren, are there any other big fundraising things coming along for AWARE that we need to kind of be braced for?
Other than the event on Saturday at the Rockwell at 5:30, I don't think we have anything on the docket
okay.
at this point.
Okay, if someone wants to come to that, what do they need to do?
Just show up. Doors open at 5:30,
okay.
Event starts at 6, free food, free entry, just a time to be a part of AWARE's community.
Okay, and then the Zumba workshop is at 5 o'clock on Sunday at Mountainside Wellness Open House, which is between Harrison Gold and 5th and 6th.
Fourth and fifth
in Harrison Gold, downtown. It's upstairs, the fourth floor of the Arctic Corp building, and it's the new Mountainside Wellness run by my good friend, and I hope eventually to be yours, Kristen Mabry. So thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Kristen, for coming on the show.
Thanks, Pat.
I'm Laurie Morton, Executive Director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault in Alaska. 2 years ago, the Council surveyed women across Alaska. The Alaska Victimization Survey paints a shocking portrait. 59 of every 100 Alaska women experience domestic violence, sexual assault, or both in their lifetime. Violence isn't the solution. Respect is always the right choice.
Brought to you by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Safety, prevention, accountability.
Registration is now open for the 2013 Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference, May 2nd and 3rd at the Denali Center in Anchorage. This annual conference offers participants an opportunity to network with national industry experts and learn the latest on policies, programs, and projects in the clean energy industry. Discounts are offered to those who register by March 29. More information at bceaconference.com or 929-7770. This message is sponsored by REAP.
Wonderful rendition of a tune called We Gather Together by Paul McCandless and Philip Alberg and Michael Manry. So, let's see. Let's take a quick look at this weather forecast here. According to this, the rest of today is going to see rain with highs around 44, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. Wednesday night, we're looking at rain in the morning and then mostly cloudy with a chance of rain in the afternoon. Snow level up at 1,000 feet. Stay up there, snow. In the morning, that'll rise in the afternoon. And highs around 46, southeast winds 10 miles per hour, shifting to the southwest in the afternoon. And then Wednesday night, it goes back to mostly cloudy with a chance of rain. The lows drop down to about 36 and southwest winds 10 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 48, northwest winds 10 miles per hour. Thursday night, cloudy, lows around 32. And it basically just alternates like that all the way through Monday. So a typical spring interlude of a lot of nice moisture hitting the ground and maybe bringing up the spring flowers a little bit. Let's listen to these wonderful programs that are put together for by Alaskan school children. I think this is a wonderful little way to catch up with some of the activities, particularly in rural schools.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
The Northwest Arctic Borough School District is home to the Tech John Baker Youth Leaders. This year, the youth-led program includes 117 kids who come from 10 regional schools. The youth leaders have been at work now for 6 years in the region. The teens who participate are chosen by their peers when they're in middle school. They're then trained to develop important skills that they bring back to their classrooms, hallways, and after-school hangouts. They learn how to talk with others about hard topics like suicide, bullying, and safe sex, and they get involved in other ways, like helping with behavior issues in younger kids or being friendly to first-year teachers to help them out. Cheyenne Wells is the youth leader captain in Selawik.
I've been a youth leader for 3 years, and this year I am finally captain, so I've built my trust that much.
Youth Leaders Program Coordinator Michelle Woods says, like elders in the village, youth leaders are the elders of their schools, and they're making a real difference.
I think the most important part of the work that our program does is the lives that are saved. The fact that, you know, we've now gone from 8 suicides, student suicides, a year down to 0 for the last 2 years. And we don't ever want to jinx it. We're not taking the credit on ourselves. However, we know that we're a big part of it.
Kivalina's youth leader captain is Christopher Sage. He says he's been a friend when it really mattered.
Well, have you ever had actually talked to someone that had suicidal thoughts?
Yeah, there's a few.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
There's a wonderful program that occurs over at either Trinity Church or McPheeters Hall. It's called Mud Rooms, and it's seven persons who tell a story lasting 7 minutes, roughly, and normally it costs $7 to get in and like that. So it's a bunch of sevens, but here is one of the presentations from this last edition of Mud Rooms.
Corinne Bosworth. Corinne met her husband, Rob, almost 28 years ago in Gustavus at the Caden Solstice Goat Roast. Doesn't that sound like fun? After the dance and a motorcycle ride home, he invited her over for brunch the next day at the beautiful log house he had built in a sunny meadow. She revealed to him later that she had married him for his log house and his Tier 1 benefits. Smart lady. He said that worked for him. But Rob took Corinne's silly joke very seriously, and like a male bower bird, he has continued building her beautiful houses in Gustavus to this day. The latest house, another beautiful log house with all the mod cons. What are mod cons? Oh. It's available to rent. It's available to rent if there's anyone out there having trouble with Juneau's housing market. Here's Corinne.
So my friend Jim Akoviak says there's no way I survived this experience I'm about to tell you about. He says that I had a beyond-death experience and that I'm actually some sort of well-disguised, well-behaved zombie. Jim's well-known for his stories, and so I'm going to tell you my story and let you decide about my zombiness. In the mid-1980s, I was working in Gustavus on my master's thesis, and a friend of mine, who was also not gainfully employed that summer, suggested we go on an adventure that we'd been trying to go on for a long time. Work had always gotten in the way before. Wasn't going to get on our way this time. So we decided that we were going to hike the outer coast of Glacier Bay. And 2 weeks later, the plane dropped us off on the north shore of Lituya Bay, and we headed north. Now, those of you who have been on that trip, or even have seen pictures or a map of the area, know that there's a tricky part to this trip. And as you're going up the coast, you've got the 15,000-foot fairweather range on one side, and you've got the Pacific Ocean on the other side, and all the melting snow and ice and rainfall that come off the mountains have to get to the ocean. So there's lots of rivers that cross your path. Some of them are wadeable, and lots of them are not. So this was back before the days of the fancy, lightweight, sturdy pack raft that people have now. We got our raft from some kids in Gustavus. It was a cheap plastic swimming pool toy designed to hold two small children max. But we worked out a system. It worked fine. We crossed a lot of streams in the first 6 or so days of our trip. And then on the seventh day, we came to another stream that was river that we figured was too big to cross by wading. So it was Tom's turn with the raft, to go first with the raft. So he ferried all of our gear to the other side of the river, including our boots, which I'm not sure what the safety issue was with boots, but over they went. And then he came back to get me, and I crawled into the front of the raft to make room. And Tom, who's the big guy, 6'5", and very solid, gave a big push off the bank, stepped into the raft, and went right through the bottom of it, taking with it the seam that held all the air in the raft. So all of a sudden we were standing in 36 degree silty melted glacier, and even if the raft had been fixable, which it wasn't, our duct tape was on the other side of the river already. So there was really nothing for it but to wade across the river. So we abandoned ship and took a hold of each other's hand and started across. Now remember, we had bare feet. So instantly we had numb feet. We couldn't see our feet because the river was very silty. We got about 3/4 of the way across, still doing fine, except for the fact that we were so cold. And I think we were so cold that we panicked at that point. We could see the bank just about 75 feet away. But we panicked and we started to run. And in one fairly big running step, we went from thigh deep in the river to over our heads in the river. And it took us, I don't know how long, a long time to struggle to the surface. We were still holding hands. It took us a long time to recover enough from the shock of the cold to even take a breath. And by the time we got oriented and facing downstream, we had gone a long ways down the stream from where we had fallen in. And right in front of us, immediately in front of us, was an immense log jam. We had about 3 seconds, I figure, to take a big breath and to understand that when you go into a log jam like that, you get tangled up in the branches, you get plastered against the log and against logs, and you don't come out the other side. But down we went, in we went to this log jam, and we got scratched by lots of branches, and we bounced off logs. But 15, 20 seconds later, we got flushed out the other side. Yes. But we got oriented, facing downstream, got a big breath, thought we were free and clear, and there, coming up very fast, was huge waves of the North Pacific. And at that point, we were tired enough and weak enough from the cold and the undertow from the river was big enough and the waves were big enough. We knew that if we got washed into the ocean, that again, we were not going to come out of there, be able to make our way out of there. So we figured the only thing there was to do was to let go of hands and to swim for the bank of the river. And we did, and just before we got washed into the ocean, we drug ourselves up onto the bank. Luckily, it was the bank that our gear was on. We lay there for a while in the mud at the side of the river, and we laughed. Is that where the phrase laughing hysterically comes from? But when we could do it, we crawled up the cut bank that we were lying on and looked over the other side. And there, just 50 feet away, less, was a large, dead marine mammal. Probably a sea lion, but we didn't investigate closely. And on it was a sow with 3 cubs. So, by that time, we were numb enough that we didn't care. We weren't worried. And luckily, the sow was much more interested in the meal than she was in us. And we tiptoed past them and up the riverbank to where our gear was waiting for us. The end.
Well, a presentation about a near-death experience given at Mudrooms in the first part of April, and by Corin Bosworth, wonderfully told. You can hear the entire Mudrooms experience. I think it's the last Tuesday of the month here on KTOO, so keep watching the program schedule and tune in for it. You're in tune with KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area in the Valley and Auk Bay. We're on K276 AF. It's at 103.1 megahertz. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, we're on K210 AS at 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. And KRNN can be heard on digital channel 872. KXLL can be found on 873, and we're also online at www.ktoo.org. If you missed any of today's guests, by the way, we record the program, and shortly after each of our broadcasts, it appears on KTOO's website. Just look for local programs and follow the link to Juneau Afternoon. Danny Peterson will be our host on Wednesday, and he'll be talking to Lou Simons about the Juneau World Affairs Council talk. The Juneau Symphony recital with Candice Lavolsi and Lucy Merrill. Beth Weigel will come in to get our appetites ready for Friday's Discovery Southeast dinner and auction. And we'll talk to Pat Race about an upcoming drawing workshop. So stay tuned for tomorrow's Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore, been your host today. I've really enjoyed bringing these guests to you, and tune in tomorrow.